Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom's another day older. He had a great birthday yesterday. Tom, you know it wouldn't be a Buckmaster show if I didn't gripe about the weather, right? And you're saying, what in the world is there to gripe about? You know what I'm going to say. It's like, what, 15 degrees
above normal?
Yeah.
Or 15, what we should be expecting.
I mean, it doesn't seem kind of December-ish. It's,
no. Well, you know, yesterday's high of 85 set a new record for the high temperature for any day in December.
In December. Wow.
Yeah. And if it stands, it will be the new high mark.
Oh, boy. I did not get that news. So thank you for filling me in. Thursday, December 2nd, upon us, 2021, Christmas. Wow. Only about 3 weeks away. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio. Our radio station is 1030 Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. Our live line calls are presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management, and we will be utilizing the live line with Dr. David Levy coming up at 12:30. But right now, it's Pima County Supervisor, District 4, Republican. He is our longtime friend, Steve Christie. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Steve, we have Mark Napier on the show tomorrow, and is kind of setting that up. He's our Friday Focus interview. He is now, for those that don't know, he had 4 years as the Pima County Sheriff. He spent a little time as the number two law enforcement officer in Cochise County, sort of his transition. Now he's back with Pima County. He is a deputy administrator, and he's put out a very extensive report on overhauling our constables system. Is this the kind of thing, where do you come down on this?
Well, first of all, let me just say that Mark Napier is just a terrific law enforcement official and professional. I have nothing but a great amount of affection and respect for him. We go back to the 2016 elections. We kind of tandemed around the election circuit, so we got to know each other very well, and I really gave him my full support when he was sheriff, particularly on the Stone Garden grants and to enforce the ability for the sheriff to make these decisions, as well as the law enforcement community in general. I've been a huge supporter of them, and that was a great deal to do with my relationship with Sheriff Napier. He now, of course, is working for the county administrator, and certainly he's got to put a different hat on and a different approach. And his viewpoint during his report, or in his report, about the situation with the constables, I disagree with him on this respectfully. I understand what he's saying. He makes some interesting points, probably very valid points, but nonetheless, we have to keep into consideration that the constables are duly elected by the public, by constituents, by voters. These are areas that are designated that the constables represent, and they are put into that position by voters and by the election process. And that, I think, is something that should be respected, because Mr. Huckleberry has made it clear that for whatever reason, he doesn't think that the election process of duly elected constables is a valid one or an important one to keep and maintain. He would rather get rid of the constable system and bring them under his control by making the constable jobs and responsibilities under his jurisdiction and
uniformity to the
county
position.
Yeah, and county administration. Mm-hmm. I think this is a wrong approach. They have to deal with enormously difficult and dangerous situations. My predecessor has talked about crack houses and constables having to evict people and the dangers that have gone on that level, and that still exists today. So I think we're going down a very dangerous path by removing another layer of law enforcement that we sorely need. And these constables are professional. Yes, there's probably some different approaches about how certain orders from judges should be carried out. But that is, if that is not what their district wants, i.e., their constituents want, there is a way to get rid of that, and then that is to vote them out at the next election, not to just simply arbitrarily decide that a duly elected system of constables should be removed simply because the county administrator wants to put them under his authority and jurisdiction. I think it's wrong and it's dangerous, and it really slaps in the face of the democratic electoral process.
Most people, Steve Christie, have very little idea what a constable does, and you're saying, and this is the fact, that these people are each elected in their particular district. You're saying that the standards that that particular constable brings to those districts, they are accountable to the voters of that district.
Exactly.
Is that what I'm hearing you say?
You're hearing that exactly. And again, they are accountable to those voters. And if those voters don't appreciate or like or support what those particular constables are doing that they voted for, they have the process to remove them. And I don't think the stroke of a pen by the county administrator is the way to do it. It smacks in the face, again, of the electoral process and the desires and wishes of the voters that those constables represent.
All right. We'll certainly bring up your view when we meet with Mark Napier, who will be our Friday Focus interview tomorrow. The termination of employees, it's referred to in Pima County as off-boarding. In other words, letting go those that are not...
In other words, firing.
Firing. That are not vaccinated. That process is continuing. What are you hearing from people?
Well, we've just received a memorandum from Chief Deputy Jan Lesher, who presented us basically with a roadmap as to how the process is going to continue from this point forward as far as employees, Pima County employees, who have yet to be vaccinated and basically are refusing to be vaccinated for whatever reasons. And it's a multi-step process, including discussions and meetings with human resources in the county, filling out certain forms and paperwork to explain the rationale of these employees who don't wish to be vaccinated. And it goes on and on and on. But the eventual end result is by a certain date, December 31st, that if after going through all this process, if the employee still does not wish to be vaccinated, then as that timeline ends and they are not not vaccinated, they will be fired. And, you know, my feeling is, are these bad people? No. Are they bad employees? No. Then why are we firing them? And I think this is the main concern I have is the sheriff's department has the highest amount of unvaccinated employees for whatever reason. And prior to the pandemic, the sheriff's department was terribly understaffed. Now we're looking at dozens, if not scores, of sheriff's deputies that are facing termination simply because they do not wish to take part in a process that puts some sort of a vaccination or vaccine in their system. Whatever reason it is, it's their reason to have. Yet we are really putting in danger our ability to fight crime and to protect our citizenry by reducing the amount of deputies on the street. And I have to ask the question, if you were being attacked or robbed or threatened by a insane criminal assailant, would you rather have a deputy who may or may not be vaccinated there to protect you? Or would you rather have no deputy there at all? And that's what we face. This is a public safety issue.
So it is your understanding that law enforcement is included in this mandate?
Absolutely. They're being pushed towards this, and we get a chart regularly of departments that have unvaccinated employees, and for whatever reason, The deputies are the largest amount of unvaccinated employees we have.
Now, the Omicron virus, the variant is here. We've had a couple of cases in the United States. Do you expect at the next board meeting, when is that meeting? Is that next week?
Next Tuesday.
Yeah,
the
next
7th.
Tuesday. Do you expect one of your colleagues, or maybe more than one, will talk about reinstituting COVID restrictions?
I do expect that, and we're going to probably hear the same old hair on fire type of rationale that if we don't do this or do that to control this or fight this, or if we need to shut this down or we need to impose this, if we don't do those things, we'll have a strain on our hospital system, multiple deaths and things, just all of the turmoil and melodrama that we've heard over the last year and a half. Simply, at this point, no one knows the extent of the Omicron
variant.
So, of course, there's always that rush to judgment to see who can be the first one to scream, danger, danger, the sky is falling.
We will take a pause right here on the Buckmaster Show. But first, Steve Christie, how was your Thanksgiving?
Filling.
Did you have pie on the table?
We did.
Uh-huh. Pumpkin?
Two pumpkin and one pecan, homemade by my wife and daughter.
Perfect. Well, if they had not been homemade by your wife and daughter, Mona's Danish Bakery would have been a great option for you.
We would have exercised that option.
There you go. And they certainly did the pumpkin, and they did the pecan, the cherry, because we had the pumpkin and the cherry from Mona's. Outstanding product. And, of course, for your Christmas table, make a nice addition. They are now taking orders for Christmas, getting in the holiday spirit up at Mona's Danish Bakery. Their website is monasdanishbakery.com. Northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, monasdanishbakery.com. Again, for the website, they are open right now for lunch. They open for breakfast Tuesday through Sunday at 6:30. We'll be back on the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Speaking of Green Things, 3384 East River Road, open daily. And if you're looking for poinsettias, I knew they grew thousands of them, but I did not know how many thousand. 25,000 poinsettias are grown right here at Green Things. Stop by for all of your annual poinsettia decorating, and they're just so many different colors. Really beautiful a display that they have over there at Green Things. Their website, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. Zocalo Village has all that beautiful merchandise, much of it handcrafted in Mexico, including Talavera Pottery. District 4 Pima County Supervisor Republican Steve Christie with me in studio. The legal action, the wheels have begun now concerning the water rate increase for those of us living in unincorporated Pima County. That water rate increase actually took effect yesterday, Steve Christie, December 1st. What's the deal with the legal action?
Well, as I've predicted all along and for many months, that this eventually will end up in the courts, and that's exactly where it's headed. The board, 3-2, voted to proceed with legal action, and I think that's obviously the best and most efficient and effective route to go. One thing of note that I've been observing is that the heretofore formidable block, if you want to say, of the four Democrat-controlled Board of Supervisors appears to be crumbling and spreading apart. And we see this because on the board level, two of my colleagues, Supervisor Hines and Supervisor Grijalva, have been supporting the city's efforts to inflict the differential water rates. And my other two Democrat colleagues, Supervisor Scott and Supervisor or Chair Bronson, have been very vocal and clear about their opposition. And I've been kind of sitting back because I think it's very, not only interesting, but I think very effective on my part to allow this Democrat-on-Democrat conflict, because what happens then is this Democrat-on-Democrat conflict is not only the two anti-differential water rate supervisors going after the two that are in favor of it, but it also is the two anti-differential water rate supervisors going after the mayor and council, also a completely Democrat-controlled body. So here we've got what was always a very strong coalition of the Democrats, and it appears that it's breaking apart. And I find it very interesting. And I've been very vocal and strong against differential water rates. I've written and talked and voted accordingly. But I'm very grateful for Supervisor Scott's very strong position against it. And he is the one that has been leading the way against his fellow Democrats. And he's been supported by Chair Bronson in that effort, too. So it not only shows that there is a division amongst the Democrats controlling the board and the city council, but it also allows me to, using outdated and tired old terms like reaching across the aisle, But it allows me to vote with a couple of my Democrat colleagues, which I think is refreshing. So I'll let them charge charge away against their colleagues on the board. And they know that I'm going to be supporting efforts against differential water rates. So I just need to keep my mouth shut and let them go.
All right, let's go to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Roberta has called us. Go ahead, Roberta. You're with Steve Christie.
Thank you. It seems reasonable to me that if people take antibody or weekly COVID tests, why can't they continue working? We have such a high crime rate, and people who have had the COVID test with more antibodies than those who have had the vaccination.
All right, Roberta, let's hear what Steve Christie says. What about that? Why not just let them do a weekly test?
Well, certainly that would be an option. It seems to go beyond and above that type of situation. They're not even going to let unvaccinated employees take part in face-to-face county-related meetings. I don't quite understand the whole process behind it, because if you look at the figures, the COVID vaccination does not stop COVID. Yet we are forcing career-minded employees that you have to take something that will not stop the virus, and if you don't, we're going to fire you. So I don't think that that's in their wheelhouse, if you will, to try to find ways to keep these employees. And it's a shame, because I get these very, very sad and very troubling emails from long-term career professional Pima County employees who are just begging some kind of a relief in this whole issue, to maintain their jobs, to put food on their tables, to protect their families, to get an income, and basically are being told that if you don't do what we wish you to do, which is to take the vaccine, you're going to be terminated.
You're one of three supervisors that represent Sahorita, and the redistricting is, my friend Dan Shear at Green Valley News says, the proposed maps really do very little to change that. Is this something you're uncomfortable with?
Well, I think from my personal standpoint, I've done very well with the way it is, as far as how the current redistricting makeup is situated, and that of course has three supervisors through Sahorita. Ideally, and I don't want to be to make it seem like it's all about me, but I think the ideal situation is to have one supervisor in that whole region, and that should be me.
Okay. Historic Canoa Ranch turning 200. Mm. The historic Canoa Ranch turns 200. Christmas light event. It's going to be actually, they're hoping it will be an annual event down there.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, very holiday-centric, festive event that really highlights and showcases the unique and very valuable asset that the Green Valley area in southern Arizona has in the Canoa Ranch. It's part of a whole new park system and a whole new effort to have citizenry and civic groups participate in the care, maintenance, and nurturing of the park system we have down there. Of course, 149 acres or 153 acres, I can't remember, was donated a couple of years ago to the county, and it has now been turned into a beautiful natural open park that was once a defunct eyesore of a golf course. This has been absolutely reimagined and maintained and turned into a great community asset. And it's part of the whole, I like to call it kind of an emerald necklace. And the Canoa Ranch is certainly a huge part of that. And I encourage everybody to take advantage of the holiday festivities that they're offering.
You know, one quick follow-up to the legal action that is now underway concerning that differential water rates. I should have followed up by asking you, the rates are now in effect, so is it too late for some kind of court injunction?
No, it's certainly not, and I think that would definitely be appropriate, and I'm sure that will be a matter of discussion at the December 7th Board of Supervisors meeting.
All right, Steve Christie, District 4, the Republican, the lone Republican on the five-member board, and as you always like to say at the conclusion of our interviews.
Well, you know, I was certain there was something I was forgetting, and I don't
know what it is.
I don't know if you've heard it before, but I love being supervisor.
I know you do. All right. I hope you have a great holiday season.
Same
Thank
to you,
you
Bill.
Steve.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
All right. We'll take a break right here. Dr. David Levy is waiting in the wings on our live line right after this.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Nice day over in Silver City, mid-60s. Great time to get away and take that three-hour road trip over to Silver City in a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment. I think you'll have a good time over there. In fact, I know you will. Most of our listeners that we send over there, in fact, all of them always come back and say, had a great time, lots to do, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. Check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, Dr. David Levy, the Buckmaster Show contributor on science, the former science editor of Parade Magazine, now head of and founder of Sharing the Sky Science Education Organization. Dr. Levy, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history, discovering 23 comets, including his very famous co-discovery of Shoemaker-Levy 9, the comet that collided with Jupiter back in 1994, and the result was spectacular. Dr. Levy, I presume, how are you, sir?
Hello, Dr. Bill Buckmaster.
Yeah, I wish. David, there is a new comet that is in the sky. Is it?
Yes.
Is this one they're calling Comet Leonard?
Yes, named in honor of my father-in-law, Wendy's dad.
What?
It is a fantastic comet right now, and as a matter of fact, I saw it this morning in anticipation of the show today and took a picture of it, which I'm looking at right now.
Really?
And I'm going to show it to Wendy as soon as we're done here.
Hmm.
It looks pretty diffuse, but it's definitely there. Anyway, the comet is beautiful. It's seriously named after Greg Leonard from the University of Arizona, part of the Catalina Sky Survey, and really, really, really happy to have seen it. I've seen it now for three successive mornings, and also while we're at it, last night's observing session was one of the longest I've ever had, 12 hours and 30 minutes long.
Oh, 12 hours of observing? So right at sundown,
well,
right?
It's intermittent, my friend. It's intermittent. I went inside and watched a movie and tried to get to sleep and kept on going outside to get it again. It's a beautiful comet, despite some clouds this morning.
Well, it's not like you got off the bus yesterday as far as your comet hunting is concerned. It goes
goes
all the way back to the day, well, December 17th, the day after my birthday.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's coming up pretty soon, and I want to wish you and all of your listeners who are honored to be listening to the show program you host, happy birthday on December 17th, Bill.
Yeah, birthday is actually the 16th, and it's coming up 2 weeks from today, but it is really coming up really quickly, as is the holiday season. And when we think of the holiday season, we think in the night sky of something called the Star of Bethlehem.
Yes, we do. And there are a number of theories as to what the star was. I'm not sure if the Flandreau Science Center is doing a show this year, but they usually do. And they just go through the possibilities. Could it have been Halley's Comet? No. Halley's Comet came in 12 BC. Could it have been a supernova? Probably not. It probably was a conjunction of Venus and Jupiter, because nobody really says that the Christmas star appeared on December 25th of the year zero. But there was a very close conjunction of Venus and Jupiter, like what we saw last December.
Yeah.
And the conjunction was so close that to the unaided eye over the Middle East on the 2nd of June of, I think it was 2 BC, Venus and Jupiter were so close together that you could not separate them with the unaided eye.
Mm.
And the telescopes weren't working back then.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I do recall going out and checking the conjuncture out last December. It was really, really fun to take a look at that, David.
Oh, wasn't it, Bill?
It really was.
Yeah.
It's time for the Dr. David Levy quote of the month on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Levy, it's all yours.
Well, to celebrate Hanukkah, I have something to sing here, but it is actually a Christmas carol, and I'm going to do it right now, but I'm going to change a couple of words.
Okay.
Said the night wind to the little lamb, do you see what I see? Way up in the sky, little lamb, do you see what I see? a comet and sing in the morning sky with a tail as big as a kite, with a tail as big as a kite.
All right. Keep your night job, as they say.
I think that's an appropriate answer.
All right.
I'm never going to sing on the air again.
There you go. All right. We've done that, right? Hey, by the way, happy Hanukkah to you and your lovely wife, Wendy, and I hope you have a great holiday season. We'll speak with you in the early
January.
First week of 2022. Thank you very much, David Levy.
Thank you, Bill, and you have a nice holiday season, and your listeners.
Thank you very
much. Lots of stargazing.
Thanks a lot. Dr. David Levy on The Buckmaster Show. Coming up next, Don Luce, the attorney. Mr. Luce of Luce Law is in the house. He will be with me right after this.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Joining me in studio for his monthly visit, attorney Don Luce of Luce Law Group, with offices, a beautiful office here in Tucson, and they haven't been in the Phoenix office, but I'm sure it's beautiful as well. Don's giving me a thumbs up. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are in their second printing. Don, how are you?
I'm great, Bill. Thanks for having me back.
Hope you and your family, your lovely family, had a lovely Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving is my favorite holiday.
Oh, is that because you like to eat?
That's part of it. but truth be told, it's the holiday of least expectations.
It really is. Yeah. No gift giving, just everybody kind of getting together. Tucson is no longer in danger of being fiscally penalized for its COVID vaccine mandate for city employees. Don, this was an action that State Senator Vince Leach, Republican from Tucson, was pursuing.
Right. And interestingly, this process where a legislator can request the Attorney General to make an inquiry or an investigation has been around since 2016. It's not widely used, but when it is used, it provides a potential severe penalty for the city that might be found to have violated state law. In this case, the city of Tucson, had it been found to have violated state law with the vaccine mandate, would have faced the loss of about $100 million a year in revenue sharing.
Big time money.
Well, it is big time money, both relatively and absolutely speaking, for the city. But as you pointed out, Senator Leach withdrew his request that Attorney General Brnovich investigate whether the vaccine mandate was contrary to state law. Now, there is a lingering issue, and it has to do with the city's policy with respect to employees who request a religious exemption. Okay, so the standard is if an employee has a sincerely held religious belief, then the city is required to give that employee an exemption. And in fact, according to the data that I've reviewed, about 10% of the city of Tucson employees have received exemptions. So,
really?
While there's a 99% compliance rate, about 10% of that has to do with employees who have claimed exemptions and have been granted exemptions and are not vaccinated. So the actual vaccination rate is probably less than 90%. But the state and the city have different views about, I should say, Senator Leach and some of his cohorts have different views about how the city has to address a request for exemption. The city's policy is that there will be an interactive process to determine precise limitations. I think Senator Leach and the people in his camp believe that it needs to be, if a city employee claims an exemption, that employee has to be given an exemption. And it's really difficult from an employer's perspective, whether you're a city or a private employer, to determine what is a sincerely held belief.
Yeah, that would be my next question. This is very subjective, Don Luce. Subjective.
It has to be, because a belief by nature is subjective.
Right.
You can't objectively verify whether someone truly believes what they say they believe. Mm-hmm. So from an employer's perspective, again, whether you're a city or whether you're a private employer, if an employee comes forward and says, I have a sincerely held religious belief, my best advice as a lawyer would be, you need to take that as a presumption that that is true. If you have an indication that it's not, then that's another case. But in most instances, there is no evidence to the contrary. And if the employee claims a religious exemption, then I would say in the vast majority of cases, the employee should get a religious exemption.
What about medical exemptions? Do they have to be vetted and followed up with or have some kind of a physician verifying that there's a medical problem?
That's a little bit different, because the medical exemption comes in under the American with Disabilities Act. An employee who claims a medical exemption oftentimes will have some objective supporting material. An employee who claims a religious exemption, by comparison, oftentimes doesn't have anything other than them saying that they have a sincerely held religious belief. But a medical exemption is recognized under federal law, and an accommodation must be made if it is all practical to do so.
Let's switch gears. The so-called audit that was carried out by the Arizona Senate, this has resulted in a couple of legal items that we want to bring to our viewers, our listeners' attention. Why don't you begin with one of those? I think it's pertaining to this cyber ninjas well, the firm hired to lead the Senate Republicans' unprecedented election review?
Yes, that is the name of the firm. And by the way, I found it interesting that just this week, the attorney for Cyber Ninjas told a Superior Court judge that the firm itself is insolvent and wouldn't have the ability to comply with the orders, even if it was ordered to do so. Now, here's where we are. There are two lawsuits brought against the Senate and Cyber Ninjas for records and data and emails and text messages and thousands of other documents that are possessed by the Senate, Cyber Ninjas, and people who are affiliated with them, including sub-vendors. So Phoenix Newspapers, which prints the Arizona Republic, and the other plaintiff is a group called American Oversight, have asked the courts to require the turnover of all of these tens of thousands of emails, text messages, and other documents. And the Senate has said, no, we're entitled to legislative privilege with regard to those materials. Because they were part of a process, right. A legislative process, and so we don't have to turn them over. It's sort of like the equivalent of executive privilege that mm-hmm. we've been hearing mm-hmm. about with the former Trump administration officials who mm-hmm. have refused to testify or provide documents
right.
before the U.S. Congress. At the state level, the Senate is saying we're entitled to legislative privilege. Now, the problem with that argument, at least according to the two trial judges who have heard similar cases, is that it doesn't apply to processes that are not part of the deliberative process. So if the legislature is communicating regarding maybe changing a law or they're involved in some other deliberative and communicative process, what they say or exchange by way of information might be subject to a privilege. But this had, according to the trial judges who've heard these two cases, this had nothing to do with that. This was the engagement of a third party, Cyber mm-hmm. Ninjas, mm-hmm. and many sub-vendors. Mm-hmm. To essentially count ballots, mm-hmm. which is not a legislative function necessarily.
Right.
They weren't considering at that point changing any laws by reason of that recount. So the judges have said that the privilege doesn't extend. And one of the judges even said, well, you got another problem, and that is you waive the privilege. You had so many live stream broadcasts and public discussions by Senate representatives and public hearings during and after the review that mm-hmm. even if there was a privilege, it's gone.
Uh-huh.
You know, because you can't pick and choose. You can't choose to disseminate certain information and then withhold other information that has to do with the same subject. Mm-hmm. Either you're going to assert the privilege mm-hmm. and release no information, or you're going to waive the privilege, in which case all of the information is subject to scrutiny. So what's happening currently is that yesterday in one of the cases, the Court of Appeals heard arguments by the Senate and Cyber Ninjas about the trial court's ruling because, as I mentioned earlier, they have lost at the trial courts. So they're now before the Court of Appeals. In the other case, which hasn't made its way to the Court of Appeals, the trial court judge, John Hanna, said that because this is likely to go all the way to the Supreme Court, you know, potentially, I'm going to put my ruling on hold to give the Court of Appeals and perhaps the Supreme Court time to review the boundaries of legislative privilege. So nothing has been turned over yet. But the writing on the wall doesn't look favorable for the Senate or for Cyber Ninjas in terms of being able to withhold the tens of thousands of text messages and emails and other
documents.
Who
would go through all that material? My goodness.
Well,
if you're talking about tens of thousands of emails.
Okay, so I think we can all agree that politics plays a big part in these types of cases. In fact, there's information to suggest that the ballot review alone cost about $9 million. Mm. And about $6 million came from political groups led by Donald Trump allies, according to reports. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So when you're talking about that kind of money mm-hmm. and those kind of political issues, mm-hmm. they'll find people to go through the emails.
Yes. So what we have here, the big picture, would be ultimately the Arizona Supreme Court reviewing the boundaries of what legislative privilege is in the state of Arizona.
That's right. And I think my opinion, mm-hmm. having read the basis for the trial court's rulings, I think that the trial judges are on pretty solid ground in saying that if it's part of a deliberative and communicative process, then the privilege applies. If it's not, it doesn't. And in this case, because you had third parties, you know, you had Cyber Ninjas, which is not part of the legislature, and then they had vendors themselves who are not part of the legislature, and information was being shared and exchanged between all of those parties, privilege doesn't apply. And mm-hmm. so I think there's a very good chance, and ultimately the courts will decide, but I think there's a very good chance that these text messages and email exchanges between all of these parties are going to be made a matter of public record.
All right, Don, we have about a minute or so, and I want to talk about your book, Estate Planning in Arizona. And the reason I want to bring it up now is it's the end of the year, and it's a good time to get your house in order. I mean, not that the rest of the year isn't a good time, but this seems to be a focus for many people the end of the year.
Well, there is a reason why we have New Year's resolutions.
Yeah. Yes.
So here's what I'd like your listeners to know. You're absolutely right about there's never a bad time to think about this, and it doesn't need to be tied to any calendar event or holiday. But if you become disabled or incapacitated, you want to make sure that you've provided the game plan for your family. You want to have a healthcare agent, for instance, appointed so that a guardianship or conservatorship isn't necessary. And you want to be sure that if you pass and you have children, that provisions are made for your children to be cared for. Mm-hmm. And in many cases, this involves the appointment of a guardian. Mm-hmm. And it also involves the creation of a trust mm-hmm. so that those funds are then used over a period of years to provide for the children's health, education, maintenance, and support.
Well, people think it's very complicated, and probably to non-attorneys, it might feel that way, but this is something you and your team do every day.
We do.
So, and try to make it as simple to the client as possible, but it's serious stuff.
It is. And as you pointed out, though, it isn't that complicated.
Okay.
The concept itself may seem overwhelming when you talk about all the various documents. But at the end of the day, what you're doing is you're pre-planning. Mm-hmm. You're saying that if this happens to me, this is what I want. If that happens to me, this is what I want.
All right. Don Luce of Luce Law Group. Thank you very much, Don. Always a pleasure. Have a wonderful holiday
season.
Thank
you, Bill. You too.
All right. That'll do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of attorney Don Luce and Tom Fairbanks, the birthday boy plus one day. Have a great day. Dave Ramsey is next.